Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Before I get going with the important topic for today, I just want to give you an update on the things that I've been doing the last 2 months, because I haven't been very active on my website, and I probably haven't sent out an email in almost 2 months. In December, I was busy trying to fix various bugs and problems on my websites. I've got a bunch of technical issues I have to sort out. Because of banning and all that sort of thing, and being chased off hosting companies' plans, I have to do everything myself in order to maintain my websites. So I have to also do the physical hosting and the physical server enhancements and fixes and so forth. And that was a very tedious process. I solved a lot of problems, especially the worst one where my History Reviewed website was actually crashing and shutting down. But there are still a couple of things I need to get back to. Then the other thing I started work on was my online shop. And my online shop is very important. And I got to a certain point with that, and in the next few days I'll be hitting that again and trying to actually get it now up and running. I did get other people to assist me on other things that I needed with it. So keep an eye open for my online shop. It's going to be something different, and it's intended to help whites. I have been hearing and reading, even in various media, about how much money the Saidlanders are getting in, and Simon Roche has been spending months in America. Then he came back, and he'll be back in America again. He spends a huge amount of his time in America busy lifting money from Americans for all their bogus projects that they're busy with here in South Africa. And one of my friends saw Simon Roche driving around with a brand new pickup truck after his trip. And there was also another website that did a long story on Simon Roche receiving $40,000. So he's been getting tons of money, and they get money also via their two Bitcoin accounts, which we can monitor actually. So the Saidlanders, as always, are rolling in the money and claiming to do huge things, but perhaps it's time to actually let out some of the facts that were in my legal documents to them. The big thing that I worked on through all of January into the early part of February, something came up that has never come up in all my years of doing political activism, in all my 19 years of doing political activism. Somebody came to me and said to me, he can assist me in setting up talks where we can have people come and listen to a talk, and they can have a meal afterwards, and he wanted me to do some talks. He's an Afrikaans guy, and he wanted me to do some talks for Afrikaans people, because one of the things that he was running into is that whites, especially Afrikaans people, are in such a bad state of mind that large numbers of them just want to commit suicide. And he himself does a lot of suicide prevention. And he has times when he gets people together and he talks to them and he tries to give them reason to live. He tries to give them reason to have a desire to carry on living in this stupid, rubbish, piece of shit, communist-run country that we live in, where the maniacs and the thieves and the liars and the murderers run the country and where they line their pockets and steal and lie and break the law, and they are the ones calling the shots. The lunatics, the fools, the liars are the ones calling the shots. I'm hearing too that there are quite a number of whites leaving the country, but I don't know of any firm statistics. But my friend is very concerned because Afrikaans people want to commit suicide. They want to kill themselves. They don't see any point in carrying on living in this insane country where everything is against us. So he does suicide prevention workshops, and he tries to do other things to help young whites, young Afrikaans kids. He tries to do all sorts of things to try and help these people so that they can live and try to carry on living. So we met in November and we had a good long discussion about things that I could maybe tell people. And we started talking about history, and I started mentioning some things, and I came to realize that large numbers of whites, including Afrikaans people, just aren't aware of a lot of things. There's stacks of stuff that they're not aware of. Things that happened to us in the past, things that happened in Southern Africa, the real history of what actually has been going on here since the 1950s. And we spoke about many things that the people don't know. And I started telling him about things that lift up my spirits, the things that I know as a fact, and the things that make me positive about the future of whites, especially the Afrikaans people, if only they knew the facts, if only they could see clearly the things that they are facing. I've only once before been asked to actually give a talk, and that was in 2003 in Holland for my first book that I wrote, which was Not Political. But with regard to politics, nobody has ever come to me and asked me for my opinion or asked me to say anything to a group of white people. So we discussed at length the kinds of things that I could tell whites, the kinds of knowledge that I could give them that would help them to see our predicament the way that it is. And once you understand how it is that we are in this nightmare that we're in, then you'll understand why I am positive about whites, why I believe that whites should stick together, why I believe that whites should stand together, defend each other, and stand together in the face of everything. Because when you see the big picture, then you'll know what the real problems are. Then you'll know what the real issues are. And then you'll know how it is that we ended up in this stupid situation that we're in, this hideous nightmare that we are moving into. And most importantly, then you'll know what it is that we can do to save ourselves, to defend ourselves, to make a future for ourselves, and why we don't have to worry about all these others who are always working for our downfall. So I thought I'd put something together, and as I put it together, I found myself also ending up doing research because there were lots of things that I knew, and then I also just wanted to double check that all my facts are correct. And one thing led to another, and I ended up doing a heck of a lot of research at the same time. I actually did a lot more research than I needed to, and later I put some of that aside. because that in and of itself is very valuable. So I've prepared a two-hour lecture on the history that you've never been taught, the history about the liberation wars of Africa and the five white countries who fought tooth and nail against black rule, who fought tooth and nail to prevent the situation which the superpowers of the world have forced on us against our will. And when you see what actually happened and what also happened afterwards, and you look at all the different things in their perspective, you will see some pretty amazing things that will make you see the whites of Southern Africa in a completely different light. And I can tell you that a lot of what's in there isn't even known to most of the whites who live here. Never mind the whites who live outside of Africa. They know even less of what actually transpired. And I hope that one day I get a chance to tell some of the whites outside of Africa face to face a bunch of facts that they could never guess at. Now, this guy who came up with the idea of the talk, there were two other lectures that he wants me to give. And one of them is about the greatest military leaders in the Western world, because that is an important topic and it's aimed more at the youngsters and at men, and that is something that I'll be working on. And the other thing that I've been doing over the years, especially in the last 4 years, is that here at my house, I've been preparing for the time when things get worse and worse and worse, and I've done quite a bit of my own work on getting off the grid. And when this guy came to my house and he saw all the things I'd done, he was quite astounded. He said to me, "You are literally off the grid." And it's true, I'm very close to that. And I did it all by myself, and I learned a lot in the process. So there is a lot that I can teach people based on my own personal experience, and that I can guide them on how to do some of these things that are tricky and normally very costly, and how one can go about it and spend as little money as possible and get as much value for your money as possible. So those are three little projects, but the one that was truly my intense passion was the first one, because it is clear to me that when people keep listening to idiots like the Zuidlanders, that they have no clue what actually has gone on in the past. They have no clue how it is that we can actually save ourselves, because as you'll see, these clowns are always wrong, and they have been wrong since 2007, and yet people in large numbers seem to want to listen to the clowns. But if you understood certain things, then you'd see that we can do things to assist ourselves. Now, the document that I'm going to read to you from is a document that I got from somebody that I was lucky enough back in 2006 to get two documents from this man. My former mentor, Dr. Chris Jordan, was in military intelligence for 20 years, and he died in 2007. But he had all kinds of high-level contacts in military intelligence, and there was a guy in military intelligence who was the top analyst regarding our enemies. And this guy has a doctorate. He's written a number of books. He was already writing books in the 1970s on this topic. And this guy does analysis for a living. He does analysis for a living for certain clients. Now, Dr. Chris Jordan gave me two of his analyses in 2006, and I published them. And I published them on African crisis. And one of his analyses back then was the best analysis that I'd ever read in all my time regarding the future of South Africa. In fact, I went and hunted for it in previous months, and I was going to publish it, even though it had been written in 2006. But then when I was going through it, because it's still quite valid, the points he made in 2006 are still very valid, actually. And then while I was looking at it, I decided to see if I could get hold of him. And to my utter amazement, I did get hold of him. And he shared with me his analysis dated November 2018. And I'm going to read to you part of this analysis. It is a 12-page document, and it's got a lot of detail in it. But I'm going to read certain parts of this document as they relate to 2019, to what is coming, and especially to what lies ahead for the whites of South Africa. I'm actually going to be writing to him as well, because I'm going to ask him a bunch of questions about some of his statements herein, because there are some things I want to ask him and clarify, because he's also written this for a certain kind of audience, so there are some things that he has to say in a certain way. Now, this Afrikaans guy doesn't work for the government anymore. He has his own customers and he does his own thing. But even so, he has to be careful about some statements and concepts. Now, this guy in the days of apartheid was one of the few, perhaps even the only, military intelligence analyst who was sometimes called on to appear on national TV and to give his opinions on our enemies. He was absolutely the top specialist in focusing on our enemies, the enemies of the whites, especially the enemies of the Boers. This ANC government and assorted rubbish who run this country, he knew about them and he knew the powers behind them. And that was his speciality. So what I'm going to read to you is something completely exceptional. This is not low-level, useless, sidelander rubbish. This is from a proper expert. This is from a proper military intelligence expert. Someone who's at the top of his field. A guy who even had a doctorate in certain subjects. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump forward between certain pages. I'll give you the headings and I will read what he writes, because this is very detailed stuff. This is intended for top decision makers. This is not for a clown show like the Sidelanders. So the real issue is what is going to happen in 2019. In 2019, we've got a general election for the parliament, and we have this new president, Ramaphosa, whom I mentioned in my book, Government by Deception. I mentioned that the guy who headed military intelligence, General Tini Groenewald, I mentioned what he told me in my book, Government by Deception. He had said to me that Cyril Ramaphosa is a communist. And his words to me were that if Cyril Ramaphosa ever becomes the president of South Africa, that the whites are finished. That was from General Tini Groenewald to me face to face in his house in about 2001. But the guy whose document I'm going to read is one of the experts in analysis who worked for General Groenewald. So on page 3 of 12, he's got a paragraph title called A Struggle World. And he writes, "When Mandela delivered his opening speech in 1994, the world was looking on in wonder and amazement at the dramatic transfer of political power in South Africa. At the time, it was a political miracle in the making. The transfer of political power was sanctioned by a free and fair democratic election. A black majority government taking over power from a white minority government. South Africa was setting an example for others to follow. Better than this was not easy to find. This was the final outcome of the liberation struggle. This was the essence of freedom." Now let me just pause there. This guy is writing this, even though this guy was on the enemy side. Trust me, he and other whites were working tooth and nail to prevent things like this. He's writing for a modern, stupid audience, but an audience that is important, and so he has to write this way. But he doesn't do this for the government. This is for other people. For the record, even the fool F.W. de Klerk has stated openly, I think he said it in a speech in Nigeria. He said that the ANC had cheated by 1 million votes in that election of 1994. F.W. de Klerk has said it. It's come out of his own mouth some years ago, maybe 10 years or so ago. So the next paragraph reads, and this is where we're now starting to dig into stuff. It's entitled Confusing Perceptions, Emergence of the Unexpected. He says, when Ramaphosa delivered his speech in Parliament in mid-February 2018, the world was looking away, for the political process has become an embarrassment, a disaster in the making. More important issues have entered the world stage. In the US, Donald Trump is slowly introducing a new way of thinking that alarms and confuses the rest of the world. At the end of March 2018, Great Britain will officially leave the EU and Brexit will become a reality. In Europe, the EU is increasingly involved in a struggle for internal unity and closer cooperation among the 27 states. The current political shift to right of center was not supposed to happen, and the emergence of anti-EU political parties seems to be highly disturbing. However, the great uncertainty is, and will be, perhaps for decades to come, the flow of migration from the Middle East and the additional regional instability. Since the start of the Arab Spring in December 2010, one Arab state after another just disintegrated with catastrophic consequences. What the EU and media expected at the time was a proliferation of democracy in the Middle East. What followed was a failed state. Let me just pause there. The concept of a failed state is a valid concept that these analysts talk about these days, about countries that basically become dysfunctional. So all the Arab states have become dysfunctional after the Western world made them free. I, of course, wonder whether that wasn't, in fact, the actual goal, that when America said it was busy spreading democracy, that the reality was to spread destruction. They always use these beautiful words when they are busy, and the British and the Americans are probably the world's greatest liars when it comes to using beautiful moral concepts and instituting all kinds of hideous things. And their actions in Africa, I assure you, are things that we know about. We know about the kinds of rubbish they got up to here. All the so-called democracy in Africa is a big freaking flop and a total lie anyway. What I'll be doing is I'm going to write to him and ask him about his views on Donald Trump and what he believes Donald Trump is busy doing, because that is going to be interesting. I'm curious what it is that he thinks Trump's contribution is. So let's continue. It's still on page 3. When the Soviet Union disintegrated in 1991, the international commitment to the struggle world of yesterday had come to an end. Let me pause there. The Soviet Union was behind these organizations like the ANC that rules South Africa today. It was sponsored by the Soviets. There are lots of governments that were sponsored by Russia. There were wars sponsored by Russia. And we know about them because we lived in them. So if anybody tells you the Cold War didn't happen, I assure you it happened. It wasn't a Cold War in Africa. It was a very hot war in Africa. We know all about it. So the point here is that he's saying that these communists, like the ANC, that once the Soviets fell, that apparently a lot of the power behind them was supposed to also fall. So that's what he's talking about when he talks about the struggle. So he says, the struggle had lost its dynamics in southern Africa, and the struggle against apartheid was no longer news. Yet only two countries are still operating in struggle mode, Zimbabwe and South Africa. And therein I agree with him, because these countries in southern Africa, and you can probably also include Angola and Mozambique, these countries are run by communists. And that's what he means. They're in struggle mode. They're still in the original fighting mode. These are commies, actually. He's just not saying it in such an open way. But he knows what this is about. Make no mistake, this guy knows his stuff. But he's got to write for his specific audience. Zimbabwe has already started with a process of internal disintegration, with South Africa experiencing conditions conducive to a very unstable society and uncertain future. We're now on page 4. In Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF are the communists who run Zimbabwe and who've been cheating at every election since 1980. In Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF ran out of options and eventually discarded Mugabe. Although he fought against British imperialism to the very end, the real issue on the streets was food. In South Africa, the ANC, that is the government, African National Congress, Mandela's old load of garbage, the ANC leadership has governed society into a situation of comprehensive internal functional decay, and finally structural collapse or implosion in many sectors. So let me repeat that. He says, in South Africa, the ANC has governed society into a situation of comprehensive internal functional decay and finally structural collapse or implosion in many sectors. Now he's going to talk about election 2019. So the paragraph is election 2019 back to 1652. 1652 is when the first whites arrived in the Cape. So he says, democracy by 2018 lost its former public appeal, and the struggle world of the ANC ended up with a doctrine and ruling party without destiny. Zuma's major contribution in this regard was the ideological repositioning of the struggle. He redirected it from apartheid, which became part of the political process in 1948, way back to the landing of Jan van Riebeck in 1652. Let me pause there. What he's basically saying here is that the president before Ramaphosa, Zuma, is that Zuma now, instead of just looking at the supposed guilt of the whites under apartheid, is that Zuma now is looking at the entire guilt of the whites going back to the day they set foot in South Africa. So it's all about, instead of just whining and bitching about apartheid, it's now about bitching about everything for hundreds of years. That's basically where he's heading with this. So he writes, with this adaption, decolonization became a black-white race issue. According to this interpretation, white exploitation already started in 1652, and any accumulation of guilt, transgressors, and eventual compensation will have to be recalculated back for more than 350 years. This interpretation of history is the basis for the current struggle against, quotes, white monopoly capital. Now, this is very interesting because in South Africa, these blacks are now talking about the concept of white monopoly capital. In other words, they're actually going to go after the super rich. The super rich who totally dominate entire industries. Examples are gold, mining, diamonds, banking. There's all kinds of stuff in South Africa. South Africa's got a large bunch of industries where the super rich own almost everything. We are a country of monopolies and oligopolies. That's what we are. And so now the blacks want to say the problem is white monopoly capital. However, the truth of the matter is that you will find that most of this monopoly capital is actually Jewish. You'll find that a lot of the monopoly capital is not just white, it's specifically Jewish. However, before you get your hopes up that the blacks are going to go after the super rich, no, you're wrong. The blacks won't go after the super rich. The blacks will even come after the normal whites. Because for their purposes, white monopoly capital is about whites. So, he says, for the foreseeable future, this is applicable to the next election in 2019. There is no functional political alternative. Only a growing political vacuum and potential for ideological extremism. Zuma's legacy set the country on a road back to the past and a comprehensive redesigning of the understanding of history. So, previously the blacks just bitched about apartheid and that everything that was wrong with their stupid lives was due to apartheid. Now they're going to say that everything that is wrong with their stupid lives is due to the presence of whites for 350 or more years. However, if you had any knowledge of history, you would realize that if the whites didn't come here, these blacks would still be living in huts and hunting with spears. However, I've heard whites who've confronted the blacks over this, and they vehemently deny this. They actually believe, these fools actually believe, that if the whites didn't come here, that today these countries would be even more developed than they really are. It is complete and utter nonsense. So, the next heading, Ramaphosa, the next 3 years. Ramaphosa will have to manage the political process up to the elections of 2019. However, his major challenge will not come from the political opposition, but from Zuma's legacy. Depending on how Ramaphosa will be guiding this, will determine the outcome of events in the post-election phase. I think they've said that the election is going to take place in about May. And they drew up a list of about 200 farms that they want to seize, and they said that that process is going to start in March. So that's just around the corner. That, for me, is a big problem. It won't be the first farms that they've seized. The ANC has already seized 4,000 white farms since 1996. Most of those farms are still in its possession. The government has already bought up 4,000 white farms. The difference is that in March this year, they are no longer going to be paying for farms. They're just going to be seizing them outright, just like in Zimbabwe. However, they've promised us they will not use violence in order to do so. So, yippee, 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 eh? So he continues forward. Redesigning the past. Time to pay up. This implies that the next 3 years will be of crucial importance. The first year, with all the expected political promises up to the election of 2019, including some land grabs, demands for free education and expectations for more state involvement in society will provide for a high ANC political profile. So all of this is just basically communism by another name. The struggle against apartheid and demand for decolonization will be rediscovered and resold to the electorate. It will be expected to galvanize black supporters, for this is how you have been exploited, and will scare the daylights out of white voters. So let me just repeat that. This is the message he thinks Ramaphosa is going to be using for this election. It will be expected to galvanize black supporters, for this is how you've been exploited, and will scare the daylights out of white voters. As whites, they will carry the responsibility and collective guilt for everything that went wrong over the past 350 years. So, let me stop there. So, you see, we whites are going to be blamed in this next election for everything that's ever gone wrong to these blacks. Everything. And they're going to be talking about the need to decolonize. So let's continue. Reparations will have to be done, and expropriation of land without compensation seems a fair starting point in Parliament. By the way, we're on page 5 now. This is, in essence, the restoration of human dignity. This is much more than politics. It induces the inner mindset of ANC ideology. It borders on the religious. Ramaphosa could hardly refuse it. So let me pause there. You see, these commies, have always been out to create racial strife, and liberals are lying to you when they tell you that the ANC is here to rule freely and fairly. In fact, I'm going to tell you a little bit of something about history that most whites do not know. That in South Africa, the Communist Party was formed in South Africa in 1921. The South African Communist Party is the second oldest Communist Party in the world. And this Communist Party was run by whites, for whites. And they even tried to start a revolution in 1922. But an interesting thing happened in the Communist Party in South Africa. These whites who were running it were dealing with Moscow. And these whites, most of them English-speaking, but also a handful of Afrikaans ones as well, these commies also allowed non-whites into the Communist Party. Then an interesting twist took place. There was a colored guy by the name of James Laguma, and he joined the Communist Party. And there was an ANC leader at the time, the head of the ANC back in 1927, was a guy called Gumede. So Gumede also joined the Communist Party. He was the leader of the ANC, but he also joined the Communist Party. Gumede and Laguma went off to Moscow in 1927. Laguma went and spoke to the Russians, and he said to them, "Why don't we turn South Africa into a black republic?" And the Russians loved the idea. And in 1928, the Russians issued the order to the white communists in charge of the South African Communist Party. They said to them, "South Africa in the future must become a black republic, a black communist republic." And that order was issued in 1928. And the white communists didn't like this. One of the top communists was a guy called Bunting. And Bunting went to Moscow. And Bunting went and tried to get the Russians to change their minds. But the Russians didn't want to change their minds. And they told Bunting and the other white communists they must work towards a future where South Africa is a black republic, a black communist republic. Now the Russians were also busy engaging in a plan to destroy all the empires of Europe, including the British Empire. And their plan was to go and support all the non-whites all across the world and to support non-whites so that they could seize countries from the European and British empires. And that is what is known as the Liberation Wars. But that is where it comes from. It came from that decision in the 1920s. And Laguma, a colored, was the guy who got the Russians to buy into this. And the Russians ever since, to this day, the Russians, even with Mr. Putin, they will support these black communists. They will give them guns. They have no problem. When Mugabe needed guns, when Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe was stealing farms, he had the Soviets ship him a plane full of 27,000 AK-47s that he needed to help with his training of his militia. His militia went on to beat up blacks, murder blacks, carry out violence against whites. They tortured people and so forth. These are among the things that you've never been told. The governments of South Africa, of Zimbabwe, of Mozambique, of Angola, of Namibia, these governments are all tied back to the Soviet Union, to Russia, to China. That is where their true allegiance lies. And in recent years, Zuma was inviting the Chinese in again here in South Africa because these blacks are really commies. And these blacks are not really that interested in the Western world. The Western world, like a bunch of fools, crawls on its hands and knees and continuously prostrates itself in front of these blacks, begging for their favors. But the blacks know that the people who will always give them guns, weapons, tanks, aircraft, missiles, that those people are the Russians and the Chinese. They have no problem selling them weaponry or even bringing them weaponry, bringing them advisors, bringing people to train them. They've done it before. This is how this thing works. The real power here is Russia and China. These blacks will turn to Russia and China when they need weaponry, and they know they will get it because that's how the arrangement has been for decades. They got weapons in the past. They will get weapons in the future. Now, the guy who writes this stuff, he used to be an expert on the Russians. He was a top expert on them. So let's continue. So he'd said, it borders on the religious. Ramaphosa could hardly refuse it. Then he says, whether all the claims and demands up to the 2019 elections will bear any reasonable success is a completely different question. Recreating the past is not only a high-risk venture, but it carries an internal destructive component. The current political system, which Zuma left behind, will not be able to deliver the demands. And in some sectors, such as commercial agriculture, it will just collapse, with catastrophic consequences for society. So, he's now saying that this is high risk, and if the blacks go ahead with this, there's a bunch of internal destruction that can come from this. Now he talks about another thing. This is still on page 5. And this is a very important concept because now we're dealing almost with a failed state. The title is From Governing Decay to Governing Collapse. The Shift from Zuma to Ramaphosa. In the 2019 post-election phase, the governing capability of the ANC will continue to decline, and the process of implosion of the state may accelerate. In this regard, there is quite a dynamic interaction between the positions of Zuma and Ramaphosa. Let me just pause there. Ramaphosa was Zuma's vice president. Don't imagine that the two of them are that different. They are very much the same. They are communists. It's, however, the liberals and the Jews who are the ones who have come and marketed Ramaphosa as being a liberal, as being very different to Zuma. This is a liberal and Jewish concept. It is not what the reality is. The reality is that Zuma and Ramaphosa are just two sides of the same coin. They might have had different methods, but these guys, both of them, are hardcore commies. They've been around, they worked together in the past. They represent the same political party. They were schooled by the Soviets. They are commies, okay? These are commies. It's the liberals who are trying to pretend that Ramaphosa is not a commie. Because they think that because he's rich, that they've got him in their pocket. But we will see. Zuma presided over a process of governing decay. It is usually a slow process and not always directly visible. Education declined over more than 20 years, and in spite of numerous reports, loads of information, and regular meetings and conferences at the highest level, the ANC government still seems paralyzed. The same can be said about a large number of government departments. The breakdown of infrastructure is again a slow process. Decay is by nature a slow process. Let me try and explain what this guy is getting at. He's saying to you that the government itself, the government's ability to do things, is actually weakening. The government itself is struggling to control its own processes, to control its own people, to achieve its own goals. Now, to a stupid liberal, this sounds like a bad thing. But I will tell you that for us whites, this is a good thing. This is a very important thing. He is telling us that the ability of the government to execute its own orders, to issue its own instructions and tell its own people, going down through all the levels right to the bottom, that for them to carry out certain tasks, that they are struggling ever more to control their own institutions and their own structures. And I see that as a good thing, because it means that their ability to execute things is getting weaker. So this means the roads aren't being fixed properly, the traffic lights aren't working, electricity is not working, the education isn't working as well. All kinds of things are not functioning the way that people in the first world are used to. But even though, let's say, the traffic lights aren't working, there are other things that are beneficial to us if they can't execute their tasks properly. There are good things about that. For example, if they come and they seize somebody's farm and they now try to make that farm work in the way they want it to, they might be able to seize it, but they won't be able to do much with it. So if you see it from the perspective of whites, decay is not always a bad thing. Because if your enemy comes and takes something from you, and he's able to make it function properly, and he gains big benefits out of it, then you're the loser and he's the winner. But in actual fact, in Africa, you get a situation where they can come and take something from the whites and destroy white power. But once they've got it in their hands, they aren't able to capitalize much on it. And therein lies the good thing for us. Yes, they can come and destroy some of our stuff, but how much benefit are they going to get from it? If they don't get much benefit from it, then that's good for us. We've lost, they've lost. It's been a lose-lose situation. And that is likely. And I would prefer a lose-lose situation to one where we lose and they win. I'm much more game for let's all lose together. We lose and they lose. That'll be good. I'd rather that than we lose and they win. So that's why some of this is good news for whites. Let's continue, because now we're getting into more hectic stuff. He says, Ramaphosa will have to deal in the post-election phase with the results of Zuma's governing decay. a lack of good governance. The emphasis in society at large will shift from governing decay to governing collapse, implosion. This is an instantaneous process without mercy. It cannot be managed by a free and fair election. An implosion destroys the functional mechanisms of society. So let me stop there. Let's go back to this. He's saying that there has been a decay in the governing ability of this black government, that over a period of time, that their ability to control the country has actually become weaker and weaker. And that this process is a process that you can't really see. It's slow, it happens slowly. But he says there comes a point where you go from decay to implosion, where suddenly the thing just grinds to a halt. And he says it's instant. So let's just read it again. He says, the emphasis in society at large will shift from governing decay to governing collapse, implosion. This is an instantaneous process without mercy. It cannot be managed by a free and fair election. An implosion destroys the functional mechanisms of society. In other words, all the things that the government's supposed to do and supposed to keep running, these things will completely collapse. He says this is going to happen over time. He says that we're going to go more from dysfunctionality to actual collapse. But he doesn't say that this is going to happen immediately after the election. He says the emphasis in society at large will shift from decay to governing collapse. And probably the best example currently is our electrical situation, the electricity. We've had real problems in the past couple of weeks with electricity. Suddenly, we've got huge problems again with electricity. Even after they'd been building brand new power stations for years, they were building new power stations, spending extraordinary amounts of money on these things. And now it turns out that even the new ones are breaking down, even the old ones are breaking down, everything's starting to break. But the breakages didn't come gradually, the breakages came suddenly. Like earlier this week, for example, 40% of our electrical supply collapsed. We were down to 60% of the total electrical output that we normally have. And it was carrying on day after day. We were sitting here and we were watching various apps and various schedules for what they call load shedding, which is rolling blackouts. And the rolling blackouts, the reason they engage in what they call load shedding or rolling blackouts is because if the power for the grid is too little, the entire grid can collapse. When the entire grid collapses, it will take anything from 6 weeks to 6 months for the electricity grid to be started up again. In fact, nobody's ever done it because it's never happened before. In neighboring countries like Zimbabwe, where the commies were also at work, they also went through exactly the same thing. They started with scheduled outages, and then eventually, when things get too bad, they don't have time for scheduled anything. They just have to switch things off, because if they don't switch huge chunks of the grid off, the entire grid will collapse. And when it collapses, then you've got a real problem. Then it means there's no electricity across the country, and it could take up to 6 months to start it up again. So this week, for example, we were divided into four states, status 1, 2, 3, and 4, where 4 is the worst, and then they start load shedding depending on the status. And they have a whole schedule worked out for the week ahead. But as it was happening, we suddenly found just at certain points, bang, the power is off for the next 4.5 hours. No warning, no nothing. Why? Because the grid is going to collapse. And they've got to stop the grid collapsing. So they just shut off whole areas, huge areas, just to stop the grid from collapsing. Now, I like this, okay? You will see that I like their dysfunctionality, and I like their collapse. And I'll explain this more later. I don't see this as a problem. Reading here about the decay of the government, the collapse of the government's ability to execute things, I'm happy with that. Why? Because I see the government as my enemy. These are communists and they're out to get the whites. I see them as the enemy. And if I see the enemy is weakening in some way, I'm happy. Even if it means that I don't have electricity, even if it means I don't have water, I'm happy because I will procure my own electricity and my own water, and so will millions of others. And it means that we're a little bit freer from these bastards. So they want to come and seize our stuff, but at the same time, their stuff is busy imploding. And I'm not unhappy about that at all. So, he's saying that we'll be moving from just dysfunctionality, what he calls governing decay, to governing collapse, where things just stop functioning altogether. And when it comes, it's sudden. And I'm happy with that. But most people who want the government to be their nanny, they won't be happy with this. They won't be happy with this. Liberals will be whining from morning to night. But a government that is anti-white and out to seize farms and out to seize property without paying for it, which, by the way, can include houses, hey? The law is written such that they can seize anything. And 70% of all land claims are against homes, they're against cities, they're against suburbs. It's only 30% of land claims that are on farms, on white farms. The other 70% is on houses, properties, commercial properties. It's on parts of cities and towns. So, me, I'm happy. I'm happy when I see the government. The government's mechanisms are collapsing. Even though they'll twist it and spin it and blame the whites, I'm happy. It means that they may want to blame us, but it shows that there are limitations in what they can do. And that's one of the things that you'll see coming out of this. Because if you remember, further up on page 5, this guy was writing, he was saying, whether all the claims and demands up to the 2019 elections will bear any reasonable success is a completely different question. So they may demand and want and blame all that they can, but what power do they actually have to actually implement their insane communist racist ideas? So let's continue. Ramaphosa will not have 20 years for the reconstruction of society. If he is lucky, perhaps 3 years. Time is running out. The post-election phase will be qualified by dissatisfaction on street level and emerging social disorder. This is the phase when a new kind of conflict situation may evolve. The race-based black-white confrontation that the ANC nurtured for so long may give way to a government-slash-population antagonism when the government becomes the enemy of the population. Okay, so what he's saying here, and he's correct when he says the black-white confrontation that the ANC has nurtured for so long. Even Richard Nixon, in his book, The Real War, wrote that the Soviets want to have a race war in South Africa. That is the whole game that the Russians and Chinese have been playing in Africa, is to create a race war. And that's why he's saying the race-based black-white confrontation that the ANC nurtured for so long may give way to a government-slash-population antagonism when the government becomes the enemy of the population. So that's a very interesting thing. He's saying that while they are getting ready to play the race card on the biggest scale ever, it might be that things will collapse to such a degree that the population itself, all the population, may be against the government. That is going to be something I'm going to ask him some questions about, because in my experience, these communists can very easily take any situation and end up blaming the whites. They will tell any lie. So whether the blacks, whether the whole population will believe the government remains to be seen. I would say that they can lie and lie and lie and tell the population that the real problem people who caused this is really the whites. But he seems quite convinced that the entire population will turn against the government. So let's keep that in the back of our heads. On page 6, he continues, "For Ramaphosa, this could be his worst-case scenario. When the unrest on the street level turns its focus away from apartheid to bread and butter issues and corruption, service delivery protests may not only mean the end of the struggle, but it could also imply the end of the ANC in its present configuration." So he's saying that the worst case scenario is that this could destroy even the ANC itself. So let me not say anything further. Some of these are going to be questions I'm going to write to him about. Let's just read this section, which is called The Post-Election Environment, A Broad Outline. The world of Zuma was largely one-dimensional. ANC thinking and planning stemmed from a single decision-making body and were embodied in the strategy and tactics document. The post-election world of Ramaphosa will be multidimensional. New and diverging components will enter the dynamics of society, which will create a new, different, interactive process, largely beyond the reach of Parliament. In this new dynamics, the much-valued free and fair democratic election may lose its impact. So it's as if he's saying that democracy won't even matter anymore, because the problem is going to be, how are people going to feed themselves? In the post-election world of 2019 and beyond, Ramaphosa will be confronted by three interactive components in society: Zuma's legacy, a new demographic distortion, a repositioning of the white section of society. Okay. Now, that repositioning of the white section of society is the key thing that we're going to get to at the end. So let me just jump over some of these other things because we don't need to focus our attention on all this Zuma legacy nonsense. Let's jump to the middle of page 7, transformation, because transformation is an important concept that I need to tell you people about, those of you outside South Africa. It says, transformation. The political system agreed to by the various political parties in 1994 was based on free and fair elections and majority rule by the winning party in parliament. This guaranteed the ANC political control over parliament and all other institutions of government. The free and fair election guaranteed political control. But the new concept of transformation, introduced by the ANC, enabled the political penetration and control of society on basically all levels. From the board of directors to the composition of the rugby team, the new concept introduced after 1994 centered on a, quotes, fundamental transformation of society. It basically implied a restructuring of society according to the demographic profile of the population. All institutions had to reflect the demographic race profile of 90% black and 10% white. With this approach, democracy has acquired a completely new meaning. This was not only embedded in the constitution, but met with standing public applause. This was good politics in terms of potential voters' support. But unfortunately for the ANC, it subsequently produced a nasty side effect. So let me just pause there. Transformation basically was a bogus basis by which everything in society had to be restructured to reflect the demographics of the country. And this meant that the blacks get 90% of everything. The blacks get 90% of the jobs in a company. And everything where there are whites and blacks, the blacks get 90%. And they even began to fiddle with the composition of various sports teams. But the most important place, of course, was this was applied all through government and all through business, including big business, especially in big business. And it meant that blacks basically drove whites out of their jobs, and whites were driven out. So this is not really democracy. This is now determining the outcomes of everything else in life, including jobs. You no longer hire the best person, you now hire and you've got to reach racial quotas. So at the bottom of page 7, he's got another paragraph, governing decay. The introduction of transformation as a policy guideline implies a major shift in the functioning of society. Whites left the public service in large numbers, and with them departed a valuable amount of expertise and skills. By 2005, the public service was basically on its knees as necessary manpower, in brackets human capital, had left the system. The political system became subject to an internal erosion of expertise and skills. In other words, let me pause. In other words, the whites are gone and all the knowledge has gone with them. He continues, the exodus of whites from the public service was replaced by a comprehensive and swift introduction of ANC cadre deployment. In other words, let me pause here. In other words, they shove all their political pals everywhere into government. So now the ANC controls every part of government. They've driven the whites out and they've put their own buddies in. It was recently stated that the three top layers of the public service were all political appointments, in other words, cadres. So in other words, the blacks shoved all their black buddies into all the upper ranks of government, regardless of what they were capable of. So that is an important thing, while white skills have left. The tragic state of affairs in local government is basically due to the process of transformation. So let me pause there. So stated in a nice way, what he's telling you is by driving the whites out of government, driving the whites out of their jobs, out of the public service, that this has resulted in a collapse of the ability of this same black government to actually do things. So that's what you need to keep in mind here, which, as I've said to you, I view it as a positive thing, a very positive thing. So he continues, loss of expertise and skills. Zuma has never been able to recover the loss of expertise and skills. His major legacy to Ramaphosa was the internal system decay of the public service. On street level, it implied a lack of governing capabilities, which I've told you. Good governance has been destroyed as the country prepares for another round of free and fair elections in 2019. There are more than enough public service officials deployed, but there is very little service delivery. So let me pause there. He's telling you there are stacks and stacks of public service officials, but what actually gets done is very little. So it's just telling you, you've replaced the competent whites with incompetent blacks, and they've even gone to the point of making sure that they are all politically loyal. And now they are struggling to actually execute that which they need to execute. In other words, to even run the country. And I'm telling you, it's not a bad thing. So, let's carry on. In practical terms, it implies that a gap has been evolving between government and population. The population voted, but the government could not deliver. A dangerous kind of interaction which could generate unrest and eventually social conflict. And then he said, government becomes the enemy of the people. This is a unique phenomenon and was basically the driving force behind the Arab Spring, the collapse of political systems in the Middle East. His next paragraph, because we're on page 8, is when society becomes governmentally empty. And I think in a nice way he's telling you that we're entering a kind of anarchy. He says, the concept governmentally empty is strange to the parliamentary political vocabulary. The concept is not applicable to parliament but to society. Governing decay implies that government ministers and public officials are allocated to the various levels of government, but they do not execute the required and prescribed functional capabilities. In other words, they can't do their jobs, basically. As a result, society becomes empty of any official service delivery. Now this, I must tell you, I regard these things as positive. In other words, the government is incapable of delivering on certain things. And it means there's less government. That's what he's telling you. So you might think it's a bad thing. It might be a bad thing if you're in a hospital, in a government hospital. But in other things, it may be good. It means there's less government to come and tread on you. At present, this is something very common in society. A medical clinic without medicine. A school with teachers but without the proper training. A tap without water because the fan belt of the pump is broken. In Parliament, the budgets of the various departments are approved, but on street level, there is very little functional output. So he's basically telling you that they're sitting in Parliament, they are giving orders, they are allocating budgets, they are telling people this must happen, that must happen, but as you go down through the process and you get to the ground level, does the child even get an education? Does somebody even get water because something broke and there was nobody to fix it? He's basically telling you the government at the top looks like it's a functioning entity, but way down on the bottom, there's not much coming out. So he says, the concept governmentally empty implies that government has abandoned the population. In other words, the government is not really able to function and it can't do things. I think another way of referring to this would be to call it almost anarchy. So, page 9, Ramaphosa's response. In his speech, Ramaphosa committed himself to a, quotes, radical economic transformation of society and promised that industrialization will be underpinned by transformation. So this sounds to me like radicalism, communism in some way. And he's linking it to more transformation. And as you've seen, transformation means whites get kicked out. So it continues. It is clear that Ramaphosa and the ANC in Luthuli House is the building where their political party's offices are. It is clear that Ramaphosa and the ANC in Luthuli House will have to reconsider the whole concept of transformation. Clarity is needed, and very soon. Transformation is basically a race-based socio-political shift in the profile of society, enforceable by law. That's true. You don't have a choice. In certain respects, this is basically like apartheid. It's just another form of apartheid. It's just that in this form of apartheid, they come and they steal your jobs and they steal parts of your business and they steal your property, it's all. So anyway, let's continue. The whole process of transformation does not require any input in terms of expertise and skills. There is no quest for capabilities in the political system, and therefore the creation of wealth and prosperity basically becomes impossible. Transformation cannot facilitate rapid economic growth because it erodes expertise and skills from society. In other words, they're busy kicking out the whites who've got the knowledge. And then they're stuck with just their dummies, but their politically loyal dummies. ANC thinking is still in line with the Zuma legacy, or for the immediate future, the pro-Zuma faction seems to be dominant. The leading policy guideline implies a functional decay of governing capabilities. It induces a kind of systematic self-destruction or political suicide. Democracy has reached the end of the road. So that's what he writes. Now he says democracy has reached the end of the road, but keep in mind these blacks are communists. And I assure you, democracy was never part of the thing that was important to them. I just want to read a little bit into the next section. We're on page 9. He talks about a thing called a demographic distortion of the population. A demographic distortion is another concept not very often used in Parliament, but of the utmost importance to the future of society. Ramaphosa referred to the demographic profile in a single sentence when he mentioned that the state convey some 17 million grants every month to one-third of the population. Let me just pause there. What he's saying is that there are 17 million freeloaders in the country. 17 million black freeloaders who are getting all kinds of government freebies, most of which is paid for by business and white taxpayers. I'm not going to delve too much into this demographic distortion. He gives some examples, and he claims that the United Nations warned against the possibility of a distortion in society more than 15 years ago. Basically, what it boils down to is that the layout of the population, the demographic profile, he basically states that the demographic profile can be an asset or a liability to the country. And that if you've got a healthy youth and they're growing up and they're entering the workforce, they provide an asset. But he said that South Africa's demographic profile is negative. Now, what I'm not quite sure about is exactly what caused this. And he does seem to hint at AIDS. And he says there is no quick fix. So I'm not sure if AIDS alone is the problem. I'll have to ask him. But there's something in here that he sees as a problem. I'm going to jump to specific paragraphs and sentences where he says some interesting things. He says, Ramaphosa mentioned the fact that government pays out 17 million social grants per month to a third of the population. This indicates a very expensive profile of society that government will have to carry basically indefinitely. Then he says, more than 7 million citizens experience hunger. Then he says, 22.6% of households have inadequate food. He also talks about a concept called stunting, retarded intellectual development and physical growth resides just under the surface of society. He does mention that 30% of high school girls have AIDS or HIV positive. He says nearly a third of all new HIV infections occur in 15 to 24-year-old adolescent girls. He brings up AIDS quite a bit. He also says that Donald Trump is not giving as much financial support for HIV. Let me read the whole paragraph. The negative impact of HIV infection can be treated with ARV medication. However, there is as yet no cure. The treatment cost tends to go up, as many patients do not stick to the prescriptive treatment regime. And the international financial support seems to go down. In this regard, Donald Trump does not share the commitment of his predecessors. So basically, these blacks are getting these expensive medicines, and these are being paid for by whites outside the country, by the rest of the Western world, and Donald Trump, at least, seems to be cutting off support. But it seems as if general support for these costs is going down. So that was page 10. I'm jumping the other stuff. Let's get to page 11. Now we get to the thing about the whites. And this is what he says. Repositioning of whites. And I want to tell you, this is very, very interesting and very important. The positioning of whites in society in the next few years will be of crucial importance, because they could either become a stabilizing force or a completely destructive component. So he sees for us two possible roles. Either we are going to help to stabilize society, or we could become the destructive component. Ramaphosa will largely have to take responsibility for this, because it will happen within his current term of leadership. At the time of the election in 1994, most whites, for political expediency, were classified together as belonging to the white, racist, minority members of the apartheid regime. Since then, the ANC has been trying to sustain this image as the major driving force in black and white relations. Let me pause. In other words, the ANC is playing the race card, and its ultimate ace is to drive blacks against whites. That is the goal. That's how it's always worked. And it's not just worked like that in South Africa. It's worked like this in the rest of Southern Africa. So he says, let me just reread that. Since then, the ANC has been trying to sustain this image as the major driving force in black-white relations. The political application of this led to the implementation of transformation. This resulted in the exodus of white expertise and skills from the public service and the concurrent governing decay of the new ANC government, first in government institutions and then in society itself. What followed was something extraordinary, a collapse of governing capabilities accompanied by an erosion of human capital in the population. The necessary human capital to sustain society at large was squandered. At the end of Zuma's term, good governance has basically collapsed, in spite of the five free and fair elections. What Ramaphosa inherited was a political system without capabilities. The exclusion of whites from the public service and other institutions occurred within a certain dynamics which is largely unknown to most people in South Africa. At exactly the time of the election in 1994, the internet was installed. When Thabo Mbeki forced whites out of the public service, they had no option but to join the new trend of the internet and participate in the world of globalization. Their children left for London, Canada, and Australia. The parents who stayed behind became involved in the sectors of society most important to them, such as security, education, health issues, small business, and commercial farming. As a result of globalization, they acquired the human capital for the formation of an alternative functioning society. See, this man in a very nice way is saying, firstly, the children of the whites left the country. This is true. Older whites have always helped their children to get the hell out of the crazy world that is Africa. Africa under black rule. It wasn't crazy before then. It was very functional. So these children have now left, but their parents and others have remained, and they got involved in security, education. Security, by the way, is crime fighting, yeah? Education, health issues, small business, and commercial farming. So he's saying, as a result of globalization, they acquired the human capital for the formation of an alternative functioning society. This is utterly critical. He's telling you that we are becoming functional by ourselves outside of government. The whites are becoming functional, have been becoming functional. And this is exactly what I have been seeing myself. That's why I keep saying to you, don't be negative about the government losing control. The government may be losing control, but the whites have not necessarily been losing control. So he's talking about the formation of an alternative functioning society that's hooked into the globalist, that's hooked into the internet, and it can function by itself. He says, by 2018, whites may still be, in political terms, a white minority, but in terms of human capital or functional capabilities, they comprise a sound majority. So he's saying in a very nice way, we might not be many people, but we are very functional. In fact, we may be the most functional people in the whole country. We are the majority, actually, when it comes to being functional. They are the only group in society with sustainable interactive expertise and skills. And this they share with family and friends all over the world. We're on page 12. In a way, they have become a global community. This is a new and strange phenomena and not yet easy to describe. There is no reference to it in the Constitution and it does not yet exist in the vocabulary of the political parties. However, it seems that whites are the only group with the capability to come to the rescue of a collapsing society. That is so important, I'm going to read it again. However, it seems that whites are the only group with the capability to come to the rescue of a collapsing society. This has nothing to do with the numbers in Parliament or the outcome of the next election. Whites have the capability for generating and transferring human capital. It is a historical legacy that Jan van Riebeck brought with him in 1652 as a product of the Renaissance in Europe, which implied the dramatic explosion of science and technology. The survival or destruction of the country is tied up to the issue of human capital. It cannot be sold, and neither can it be nationalized. It is an acquired ability. So, in a nice way, he's saying to you, the people with the most knowledge and skills in this country to save this country are the whites. But the whites have been driven out of everything everywhere. And the government can come and they can try and seize this capital if they wish. But it's basically in our heads. He's basically saying we are functional, they are dysfunctional, the government is the most dysfunctional, and the government could need us. But we ourselves are functional. The whites are functional. We're fine. We can look after ourselves. That's what he's saying here. We've got the knowledge, what he calls the human capital. So let's continue. And wait until you see what he proposes here. Historic deal between black and white. What Ramaphosa will need after the election is a new historic agreement between black and white. Not in terms of numbers won in parliament, but as an assessment of human capital needed in order to save society from the politicians. Ramaphosa will need a dramatic increase in expertise and skills an injection of human capital in society and government. Unfortunately, the ANC has damaged the formation of human capital, education and training, over the past two decades, to such an extent that a new liberation of the black community from a lack of expertise and skills will not come from the ruling party. Next paragraph, reintroduction of human capital. What will be needed to prevent a catastrophic decay of human capital will be a reintroduction of human capital into society at large. This may be the time and place for Ramaphosa to strike a deal with the white community. Their entry or participation in the disastrous educational system may turn the process around and procure the future for the black community. Next paragraph, different kind of political thinking. In order to achieve this, a different kind of political thinking will be needed in the post-election period. It was part of the Zuma legacy that a majority of numbers in parliament would automatically lead to good governance. When Zuma left, it was clear that a majority of numbers could lead to governing disaster and formation of an abnormal society. To turn this imbalance in society around, the next election of 2019 will hardly make any difference. The world has moved on, and future prosperity is no longer defined in Parliament, but in the formation of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, a knowledge-driven society. Will Ramaphosa adhere to the struggle thinking of yesterday, or does he have the capability to shift to a knowledge-driven society? The final choice between poverty and prosperity. So there you have it. Will Ramaphosa adhere to the struggle thinking, in other words, communism, of yesterday, or does he have the capability to shift to a knowledge-driven society? The final choice between poverty and prosperity. So what this guy is saying, in a very nice way, is that the blacks drove the whites out of government. That the blacks, who took over government and all the different structures of government, that the blacks ended up with a lot less knowledge and skills. They drove out competent whites, replaced them with incompetent fools and political stooges. Then what they also did was they were supposed to educate their own people. But their own educational system has failed them. And they've been unable to attain the kind of skills that they actually need in order for them to function. And that in reality, all the real skills are still lying inside the heads of the whites. And he's saying here very clearly that only the whites can save this country. Only the whites can save the decay of the government and the blacks of this country. That only the whites can actually save everybody. That's basically what he's telling you here in a very nice way. That the only real skills that exist are all still with the whites. Now he says, Ramaphosa must choose. If he uses the whites, he's going to get prosperity. If he chooses to go against the whites, he's going to get poverty. And my friends, I want to tell you, that this is very similar to what happened in Zimbabwe before Mugabe seized the farms. He went after the farmers because they were rich, because they were successful. The same thing has happened in South Africa. Despite all the farms that they bought from the farmers just took the money and bought other farms, and in some cases, farmers bought multiple farms. So even though there were whites leaving the country, there were some farmers who ended up, some white farmers, who ended up buying lots more farms. And they were actually richer than they were under white rule. In other words, a smaller group of whites gained lots more money. And this may have happened in many other areas. Afrikaans people have done very well on the stock exchange, for example, and in business. So they kicked the whites out of government, but those whites have now succeeded in private business by themselves. Now let me tell you what this guy predicted in 2006. In 2006, he predicted, and I've still got all the documents, I can easily publish them. In 2006, this man predicted that in the future, the business people, that business would have more power than the government. That business would actually be the driving force in society and not government. He actually predicted that in 2006. And here we are 13 years later, and indeed, the whites have been driven out, are functioning by themselves, looking after themselves. Most are not rich, but they are functioning in one way or another. And they either work in business or they have a business. And he's telling you that the government is the thing that's now dysfunctional. That the government is not capable of doing anything. Now back then he said that the business people would have more power and would drive society more than the government. And now he's telling you that in actual fact, government has collapsed as an actual functioning entity. Now my view is that these blacks, now that they're in this situation, these blacks will not go to the whites. This is my view. That these blacks, despite their weaknesses, will not go to the whites. They will actually use this opportunity to try and smash the whites more. This is my view. I find it hard to believe that they will come and engage the whites. I find it hard to believe that they will want the whites to come and save them. They will not want the whites back in their structures. They have a problem with loyalty, and they won't want the whites to come back into their things where the whites can have power. My view is that they will use this opportunity to go after the whites as much as possible. But what he's telling you is that the truth of the matter is that the whites actually have the real power. The whites have the real skills. The whites are the ones that are really functional. And this is where I would say the time is right for the whites to start sticking together and forming their own stuff, because he's telling you that the whites are the most functional. The whites are already a functioning entity by themselves in many ways, already. And this is why earlier on when he says these blacks may want this and want that and have these demands and want to make the whites pay back. But the truth of the matter is, can they actually enforce what they really want? We are actually in a very, very interesting position. A position which, if we whites wanted to seize control of our destiny, now is the best time. Because the blacks are very dysfunctional, whereas we are still functional. And this is the time we could actually make our moves to start sticking together and working together even more determinedly. We are in a perfect situation, a situation that may never occur again. And I can tell you in Zimbabwe, when they went after the white farmers, they went after them because they had become rich. In fact, the white farmers in Zimbabwe were controlling the black opposition that was busy beating the government in elections. So, in other words, the whites in Zimbabwe, despite having become less and less back then, they were still wealthy, they were growing wealthier, they were growing more powerful, and they were actually starting to take on the government by way of the black political party, the MDC, that they had created with the blacks. They were going to destroy the government. They had the power in their hands through financial control of the black electorate, the black voters. And so the government then came and seized the farms in order to destroy the supply of money to the MDC. Now, in South Africa, the whites don't at this point actually control any kind of black politics. There are many who've tried, but I don't see any form of success that has actually taken place. So, whites don't have that power in South Africa. But what whites do have is they have the power to look after themselves. They have got lots of their own power. And the numbers of whites in South Africa versus the number of whites in Zimbabwe, and as a percentage of the population, is completely different. There are vast numbers of whites here compared to the numbers of whites that were in Zimbabwe at the time those farms were seized. The whites as an entity actually exist, and as he tells you, they are functional. They've got the human capital, they've got all kinds of things sorted out for themselves. The whites are the most functional people in this country, and nobody else can do what the whites can do. And this is why I think we don't have to physically fear these people. I think these people, given the choice of which way must they go, I find it hard to believe that the blacks would ever reconsider negotiating with the whites and taking a step backwards against the whites. I find that impossible to believe. In my book, Government by Deception, I spoke about the concept of power forever. The blacks will do anything. Which choice will the blacks make? The blacks will go for the dark side. The blacks will choose poverty, conflict, and destruction rather than seeking a new historic deal with the whites. That's my view. And I'm going to write to this guy and I'm going to raise some questions and tell him some of my thoughts and see how he responds. And I want to see what other information he's had since November. But I must tell you, my own studies of these blacks is that these blacks will choose the dark side. Robert Mugabe said at the time that even if half the population had to starve to death, he would seize the farms. And The rest of the world rushed in to feed the blacks, which annoyed me a lot. It annoyed me that Britain and Europe and America rushed in to feed the blacks when we could have left them to starve to death. And that's my concern here, is that the rest of the world, instead of siding with us and understanding the advantages we have, the massive advantages that we have, that they're instead going to rush in to the aid of these miserable, racist, dysfunctional black communists, and they are going to save them and assist them when they come to destroy us. But the thing that I want to watch this year with great interest is I want to watch what happens in the seizure of the farms. The seizure of farms without compensation. Because from what I could see, these blacks are determined. And I'm going to raise the issue of General Tini Groenewald with this guy, because this guy did work for Tini Groenewald, who was the head of military intelligence. This guy was a boffin. So I want to chat to him about some things. And the key thing here is that despite the blacks running the government, the blacks being officially in control, the truth of the matter is that it's the whites who have retained the main knowledge base. And it's the whites who could save the country. Now, maybe he's suggesting that when the government is the enemy of all the people, that the other people will then want the whites back. But I don't believe so. I believe these non-whites, they are racist and miserable and full of hate. I believe that they will, under no conditions, renegotiate anything with the whites. But this guy is right in stating that that is the strength of our position. That is how strong we actually are. And the more they drive whites out, the more they are setting themselves up for failure. They've actually destroyed their own skills base. Now, he talks about the skills base only within government. But I will tell you that the same thing has happened in business. Maybe not quite to the same degree, but it has happened in big business. And I've seen it. I've been aware of it. Just the other day when I went to two banks, the one day I had to phone the telephone company, Telkom, and I had to find out about some stuff. And the blacks were telling me, no, we can't help you because our computer systems are down. Then I went to a bank and I had to collect something there. And then part of the way through, the guy said to me, I'm sorry, I can't help you. My computer is frozen. Somebody else will have to help you. Then I went to another bank to also do something there. And they said, we cannot assist you at this moment because our computer system is down. And I'm hearing these kinds of things all on the same day. So I want to tell you from my own experiences here that although government itself may be the most dysfunctional part of this country, the next most dysfunctional part of this country is actually the big, big businesses. Those white monopoly capital businesses that these blacks are going to apparently target, those white monopoly capital businesses are the next set of things that are dysfunctional. And it's actually the small businesses that are the most functional. That is actually the reality of this country. What irritates, annoys, and irks me is that you'll get Australians, Canadians, British, Europeans, Americans, rushing to the aid of the black government. No matter what they do, no matter how racist it is, no matter how nasty it is, everybody rushes to save the blacks. And nobody ever thinks of investing in the whites, of taking a chance on the whites. Not even the whites themselves think of doing this. And yet we are the most functional part of this country. We are the greatest knowledge base in this country. And yet we don't even think of ourselves in that way. But here is a guy who writes these reports, and he doesn't do this for small-time people, I will tell you. This is intended for very high-level clients. He's got very special high-level clients. So, there you have it. The notion of the repositioning of the whites of South Africa. Now, the liberals might say this must happen, or the liberals might imagine good things will happen. But these blacks are commies. Ramaphosa's a commie. And these blacks, I don't see them backing down. I don't think the blacks will back down. No matter how dysfunctional they are, no matter how much their people will suffer or even die, I don't believe the ANC will in any way allow the whites back in or ask for their assistance unless they do it in some threatening way. But I don't see them wanting us around. I don't believe that. They would sooner let a third of the population die than even consider renegotiating anything with the whites. I don't believe it can happen at all. But this guy seems to believe that the ANC will be so weak that there are things that they just won't be able to do. And I do understand the concept, because Dr. Chris Jordaan discussed a concept with me once about how you destroy an organization. And what this guy here is basically describing is part of the process that would happen if you maliciously wanted to destroy an organization. But in this case, they've destroyed themselves. So let me end by saying the whites are in the best position they're ever going to be in. It's not going to get any better than this. And the blacks have got big problems. Big problems. And the problems are going to get worse. If ever there was a time where the whites could work together and actually do things, now is the best time of all. Do things among themselves in order to make themselves as a group more functional, more tightly knit, and defend the interests of the group. Now would be the perfect time to do those things. And I assure you that the blacks don't see wealth and don't see success and wealth among whites as a good thing. They do not want us to prosper. They do not. And if they see us prospering or becoming strong, they will even more crazily lash out and come after us. And they are such a bunch of spoiled brats and useless bastards. They are so used to the entire Western world coming to their aid. And they will do it. They will come after us even when they are dysfunctional and we are functional. And the stupid Western world, along with the evil governments of Russia and China, literally the entire world will come to help these dysfunctional, racist, communist, black bastards as they come after us. When in fact, there's nobody out there who's willing to wager a bet on us. And we ourselves aren't even willing to wager a bet on ourselves. And we are perfectly, perfectly positioned. We are in such a perfect strategic position, despite all the attempts to destroy us. We are still here. We are still very functional. We are the most functional. And we still have an ace up our sleeves. It is an incredible situation that we're in. And it's so sad that we are not seizing this for all that it's worth. That we are grabbing this with both hands and hanging on to this opportunity for dear, dear life. Because we are in a good position and our enemy is in a bad position. And if we had common sense, we would cling to this for all we're worth. But I'm afraid so many stupid things have happened over these decades. I find it almost impossible to believe that the entire Western world and nobody is on our side, even though we have this wonderful opportunity here to do our own thing. There are so many advantages now that we could take hold of quietly and just look out for ourselves and do our own thing. And the blacks, it'll drive them crazy. And I assure you, they will lash out at us and attack us the moment they see we are functioning and we are working better together as a group. I can tell you, the blacks will come after us like crazy. And yet we are the real strength that lies here. Now, all of this is a discussion about basically economics and being functional in the normal day-to-day life. Nowhere in this is there any discussion of military skills. There's no discussion of that in this newsletter, of course. And that is the other area that the whites need to look at. Because not only are we functional in these other ways, but we could also be functional militarily if we ever chose to be. If we ever chose to be. So anyway, so there's some thoughts for you. Truly a situation where if we were clever, we would not assist these blacks. We should rather choose the path that leads to their destruction. Because I assure you that regardless of the situation, those blacks are out for our destruction. Even if it means big problems for them. These blacks cling to power for all it's worth. They are completely different to the whites. And people do not understand how these communists think. And this is stuff that I wrote about in my book, Government by Deception, back in 2002. I told people about this concept of remaining in power forever. And you can see, these blacks will always win the elections. And in other countries like Zimbabwe, if they can't win the election honestly, they'll win the election dishonestly. And they just do it ad infinitum. Those blacks have ruled since 1980. And the blacks of Mozambique and Angola have been doing it since 1975. This stuff doesn't end. And people who predict that the ANC is going to collapse, you have no idea what you're talking about. The ANC will become even more vicious when it starts to lose. Then you're going to see the truly ugly side of these people come out. You're going to see what scum they are. And they will even, at the drop of a hat, they'll even kill blacks who vote for other political parties. So there's a lot to see about what's going to happen. I reckon this is going to be a very interesting year. For me, the big things I want to watch is Ramaphosa, the elections, the election rhetoric, the seizure of farms. And I'm fully expecting every liberal, every white, every nation on the planet to come running to save these useless bastards and enemies of ours. So that is the saddest part for me, that we've got good opportunities and we don't even use it. The blacks will be functioning and getting help from every corner of the planet. And whites will be falling over themselves to assist these bastards, scum, who are our enemy. Absolutely, it disgusts me into my boots, I tell you. So, there's some food for thought for you. So that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon, and there are other things I will update you on. Take care of yourselves.